playing all over the planet now.
This is Bondi Tunes International, the week that was.
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia. And I'm joined by our correspondent in Bibbenlouk in rural New South Wales, Rick Witherby. Welcome to our broadcast.
Yeah, hello, mate. Hello, everyone.
It's been a while since we chatted. I just want to explain to people, because I don't talk to you very often. We've got new listeners all the time. Bibbenlouk is a very small town in, is it the middle? Would you call it central west New South Wales?
No, mate. It's in the Snowy Mountains region on the Monaro. And it's really a locality. You couldn't call it a village even. It's just a locality with a few houses.
Do you like living in a kind of a place where there's not many people? Because I watched you on social media talking about, you know, big cities and I think you were saying, well, you know, this is what happens when you live in a big city. I can't remember what you're responding to. Enjoy the country life? You say the Snowy Mountains, of course, that's quite a popular place for skiers in our winter in Australia. But do you like the sense of quiet, I guess?
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, it's nice to be alone. It doesn't mean I don't like people, but like my nan used to say to me, you know, she used to say, I like people, I just don't like them en masse. And that is exactly the same with me. I just don't like, I think cities and human nature can be a toxic mix at times, but that's just me. So I avoid cities like the plague. I avoid cities like the COVID vaccine. So, you know.
And I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, the situation in Australia with regard to COVID-19, which is probably turning into COVID-21. Do you think that Australia is dealing with this pandemic quite well or not?
Well, from the perspective of infections, initially we started out really badly. You know, with the cruise ship, the Ruby Princess, wasn't it?
Yes.
And the nursing homes in Melbourne, I think we started out really, really, really badly. And those hiccups, if you like, were... And every single hiccup, actually, in Australia has been due down to a political machination that's just gone wrong. Somebody's made the wrong decision politically at the top, leadership-wise, and it's blown up. For example, the blowout in Melbourne when we had all those deaths in Melbourne, I mean, and again... That was down to the wonderful idea of putting security guards in hotels, and the security guards weren't trained, and
they were outsourced as well. This is important because not only were they not trained, but they were outsourced to private companies, Rick.
They were, and they had additional jobs elsewhere, so they just spread it around. But I've always said, you know, Blind Freddy could tell our politicians that these things are going to go wrong. I mean, the Ruby Princess was just a classic example. All those people allowed off a completely infected ship to just go all around Australia. We were very lucky with that one. Now, in terms of now they've got it under wraps. One would assume they've got it under wraps. But, and this is a big but in my mind, we shouldn't be complacent about that, because we are an island on the bottom of the planet. England and America are transport hubs for the world. Of course it's going to go ballistic over there.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about how infectious it is, and there's no doubt about how dangerous it is, particularly to the elderly. I'm not disputing that, but I do think there is a lot of hysteria, and it's being whipped up. It's the hysteria appears to me to being whipped up by the media,
yes,
and whipped up by the government. And the only people that are going to profit from this are the already rich and big pharma, you know.
Yeah.
So, why?
Let me ask you: why do you think this hysteria being basically manufactured by the government and indeed big business, if you like,
the media in general? I don't think it's being manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's being overtly or even covertly manufactured. No. I just think we're in a serious groupthink event. Now, you may remember what the classic example that I used to teach when I was teaching was about groupthink, is the space shuttle Challenger back in 1986. You remember when that exploded?
Yes. In fact, I was on a radio station. We were the first to actually broadcast country.
You know, that shouldn't have... Two of the rocket scientists said this ship should not be launched, and the seals on the rocket boosters are not right. And there was a large group of scientists and rocket engineers and everybody, and they basically said, no, it'll be right. And they got this group thing going, and the two sensible people that said, no, we shouldn't be doing this, just got often the ways... They just got shouted down by the majority. Now, I think there are people out there with differing views on the COVID epidemic and the vaccine. There are people out there with alternate views and alternate strategies, but they're not even being considered. They're being, in fact, they're just being quashed. If you mention that you've got an alternative view, you will be completely quashed. And there are some
these people would be quite astute.
Experienced.
Mm.
Yes, experienced and astute. And some of them, a lot of them are also scientists and medical people. They're virologists and... I have a great deal of experience in DNA technology. There are people out there that have an alternative view, and right at the start of the massive effect it's had on America, and in England, there's only one way. It's their way or the highway, and you know, as I said to you before. A good sign of insanity is doing the same thing,
yes,
using the same strategy over and over again and expecting a different result.
Mm. Making the same mistakes
now,
over and over again.
We're an island. Mm. We have got borders that are so secure.
Mm.
We've managed to contain it. So is New Zealand. It's interesting, actually, that quite a large majority of the islands on the southern hemisphere, much like Taiwan and New Zealand and other of the Pacific islands, they've all managed to do the same thing.
Mm.
So it is a property. It is a property of geography as well, and clamping down those borders. But Henry, how long can we do it? How long can we separate ourselves from the rest of the world completely?
I want to just...
Some people say that the virus is backing off in UK and America because of the vaccine. When there's other people saying, equally qualified virologists are saying, no, this is quite... could easily be the seasonal effect. You know, we're coming out of winter overseas, and it's going to be reduced. So it remains to be seen.
She hangs her head and cries in my shirt. She must be hurt very badly. Tell me what's making you sadly. Open your door, don't hide in the dark. You're lost in the dark, you can trust me. 'Cause you know that's how it must be. Lisa, Lisa, sad Lisa, Lisa. Her eyes like windows trickle in rain upon her pain, getting deeper. Though my love wants to relieve her, she walks alone from wall to wall, lost in a hall. She can't hear me, though I know she likes to be near me. Lisa, Lisa, sad Lisa, Lisa. In a corner by the door, there must be more I can tell her if she really wants me to help her. I'll do what I can to show her the way, and maybe one day I will free her. Oh, I know no one can see her. Lisa, Lisa, sad Lisa, Lisa.
And if you've just joined us, I'm Henry for Bondi Tunes in Sydney, Australia, and I'm talking with our correspondent in rural New South Wales, Bibbin Luke to be precise, Rick Witherby. He's talking about worldly things. Let's get back to him now. I just want to mention to our listeners who may not have heard you on air before that you worked at the Army Physical Training Corps and the Royal Army Medical Corps, and you used to treat people in war. I think.
Yes, that, yeah, I mean. Most British soldiers have been overseas and in war zones, and I've seen a lot of things in my experience, and something I say to people, do you know, Henry, that 15,000 children die every day from starvation? You know, that's 15,000, one child every I think it's every six seconds dies from starvation.
Yeah,
okay,
it's horrific. Yeah.
4,500 people die of pulmonary tuberculosis every day. Millions every year. 3 million every year die from malaria. 280 million are infected with a slow death called schistosomiasis. Mate, where is the hysteria? Where is the concern? The point I'm making here is this is happening in our little privileged bubble.
Yes.
We were not bothered about the third world and malaria and tuberculosis and schistosomiasis and starvation. We're looking at the United Nations is now looking at one of the biggest events in Yemen of children and mothers starving at the moment because of a war to which Australia supplies weapons, and so does America, and so does Britain.
Yeah, it's dichotomy.
Saudi Arabia giving. It's absolute. I get annoyed with hypocrisy.
Yeah.
And that is just because it's the third world and it's not affecting our privileged little bubble. To me, it's very Marie Antoinette.
Don't you think?
The people have no bread. Well, let them eat cake. That's what it's like to me.
Yep. The World Health Organization, it's interesting how they do prioritize. They are called the World Health Organization. The world includes, the third world as well as the so-called first world. It seems bizarre to me that there's this bias towards the first world. You are absolutely right when you say that in the so-called Western world or the developed nations, we are going nuts over this pandemic. But what you're talking about is historical. It didn't happen just a year ago. It's been going on for decades and decades. You wonder about our priorities as a human race.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't need a vaccine to feed 15,000 children. Millions and millions of children.
You just need
1%,
food.
1%. Yeah, 1% of the American defense budget would feed the third world. 1%.
As someone who worked in defense, how do you sort of feel about that?
Oh, I'm very ambivalent about my... I served with a very exclusive branch of the military. Very exclusive. Mm. And I was proud of that service because it just getting to that point was just it was the hardest thing I've ever done, and I've represented my country at the marathon. But just getting into that regiment, my final regiment, was just the hardest thing I've ever done. So I'm very proud of the fact that I managed to achieve that. But as a combat medic, I'm a bit sort of ambivalent about war. I have very mixed feelings about war and its hostility and the human race's propensity to drop bombs on each other. Now I just do. I watched the movie Hacksaw Ridge, you know, and the young man who just refused to pick up a gun and became a medic, and even then he was brutalized, you know. Again, it was Hollywood. It was a bit of Hollywood there, but that's when you do those sorts of jobs, and I've always done those sorts of jobs,
yes,
teaching, firefighting, and those sorts of things. You are ambivalent about war.
So with the situation that we're in Australia, it's a good deal better than most of Europe, I would say, and certainly North America.
Oh, my God, yes.
I want to ask you about, precautions and how not to get this dreaded virus and what people are doing. What do you think of the wearing of masks?
Well, if that's, I'm perfectly prepared to wear a mask if necessary. I mean, I live in the snowy mountains, and we've come nowhere near even one case of COVID up here, you know. So, but if they said you wear a mask, I would wear a mask. I have to laugh when I see people worrying about a mask, because I used to live in a during the Cold War. We might be in a nuclear, biological, and chemically contaminated environment for days on end, and you had a bloody great big respirator on, and sucking air through that was a nightmare.
I bet.
Plus, you were in what we used to call dressed up in a noddy, what we called a noddy suit, and the noddy suit was just like a big set of one-piece suit with rubber gloves and rubber boots, and you pulled it on over yourself, and it protected you from chemical and biological agents, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm still not convinced that this isn't an escaped biological agent, but there you go.
And
we've had the UN go in and do 2 weeks of research.
Mm-hmm.
Spend half an hour at the markets and come back and said, oh, no, this didn't come from a lab.
You are talking about Wuhan in China, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah, I am. I think that, you know, it's just crazy. I think they went there for 2 weeks and they spent half an hour or an hour or something at the markets, and they're talking to a totalitarian government and getting their data from a totalitarian government. What they're going to say? Oh yeah, we were working on this stuff in the lab. You know, of course we were.
It's lip service.
And it's lip service. We all know they were.
Mm.
And Britain does it. We had Porton Down in Britain. I was asked if I wanted to go there as a volunteer to be experimented on when I was a young soldier, and I said, no way. The Americans have theirs. Australia has it. I mean, funnily enough, British used to experiment on Australian soldiers with lots of chemical and biological agents back in the 60s, 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Wow.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Wow.
We used to watch training movies. When I was in the army, I joined in 1970, and as a young soldier, we used to watch training movies of Australian soldiers getting poisoned by chemical agents and biological agents, and oh yeah, yeah.
Good Lord.
We used to use Australian soldiers as guinea pigs. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You would half expect at that period of time, you're talking about 1970, I mean, I've seen footage of Aboriginals in chains, 70s footage, but these are basically Anglo-Saxon soldiers being tested on like guinea pigs. I can't believe, because it's not that long ago, 1970, you know.
I mean, I'm still in touch with my commanding officer who asked me, if I would be willing to volunteer to go to Porton Down for several weeks on double pay. They offered you double pay.
Mm.
And I said, well, what happens if my balls drop off in 20 years' time? I said, no, thanks. I won't be doing that.
Yeah, it's not...
The only reason these people want a guinea pig is because they don't know what the hell it's going to do, so they'll just find out.
Look
at Maralinga. What?
Yes.
God.
Mm. Mm. No, I was going to say double pay doesn't cut it, does it? to risk your life.
No, mate. No, a soldier's double pay in the British Army back in the 1970s, when unemployment was rife. They didn't have any problem recruiting, so the pay wasn't an issue.
They didn't have to tease people to get in.
You got your accommodation, and you got to travel the world.
Yeah, it is kind of it's so well known, you know, people, young people, especially in depression eras, where at least if you go into the Navy or the Army or even the Air Force, that you do get your wages. It costs you virtually nothing because you don't have to pay rent. That sort of thing has been around for a long time. Before we go, I just want to ask you, I've asked you about masks, and that's an interesting answer I got from you, because I figured that you are taking everything with a pinch of salt in terms of what's being done about this pandemic. With regard to treatment for the pandemic, what are your thoughts on the vaccines, and would you get one yourself?
Right. I am a big advocate for vaccines. Absolutely. I think they're marvellous. However, this is a messenger RNA vaccine, and if you're just familiar with the basics of messenger RNA, it's a transport vehicle for messages around a cell, and they're using messenger RNA to take in parts of a virus that resembles COVID, and the result will be that the cells will produce antibodies to that, basically. It's never been done before.
Mm. Are you
messenger
confident?
RNA? No. It's never been done before.
Mm.
The animal trials in the main were missed out. They went straight for human trials. They can say that they haven't skipped any things as much as they like. I'm an old man. I'm nearly 70. And I know how often leaders and experts, you know, there's the old saying, an ex is a has-been and a spurt is a drip under pressure, come out with these things. I will not be told when I am going to take this vaccine. That's my decision, when. Mm. And I may well take it, but I will not be told when.
Mm.
How do we know what this vaccine is going to do in 10 years? They will say they don't know. They will quite readily say, we don't know what it's going to do, but we are dealing with this now.
Mm.
Now, I am not going to end up in a nursing home with dementia brought on by something that they hadn't considered. I'm going to consider this, and I'm a big believer in vaccines. I think they're great.
Mm.
But the other vaccine, of course, the AstraZeneca vaccine, you know, I mean, that one's got, that's been piggybacked in on a chimpanzee virus. And they're using, I mean, I'm not religious, but where are Catholic people going to get off when they find out that, you know, that some of these vaccines, and they were, they'll admit it, were produced using the properties from fetal cells, fetal kidney cells, from a child, a baby that was aborted in the 1970s.
Well, there's a huge dilemma for not just the Catholic Church, but many religious institutions. I mean, gee, the dichotomy of that.
Yeah.
I can see a lot of problems there.
I can too. Hmm. I can too. And again, I will stress that I'm a big fan of vaccines. Mm. I've seen what they can do. Mm. With smallpox, we eradicated smallpox with a vaccine.
Yes.
And I've seen smallpox. I saw smallpox in Africa when I was over there in Sudan in the early 70s. I've seen many things, you know?
Yeah.
Vaccines are great things.
What about mutation? What about the change of the DNA of the nature?
That's another. Yeah, that's another kettle of fish altogether. You know, what are they going to do? Are we going to be like? I worked in disability support for a while, and you know, they give the disabled people in these nursing homes that are profoundly disabled, they get a flu vaccine every year because it's a coronavirus and it just mutates. So you have to keep on. And I think that will happen. I think they'll constantly have to be revisiting their the virus and working out strategies to adapt the vaccines to suit the new virus.
You mentioned the flu vaccine and how they must have to jiggle it every year or whatever because it changes its structure, and I guess you know with this virus it's probably already doing it, I think we're kind of with this forever, aren't we?
I think so. I think what's going to end up happening, okay, is that we will end up trashing whole economies and people's lives, and we'll end up living with this virus anyway, much as we do with flu and the common cold. That's what I think. We may well get on top of it with a vaccine. I don't. But it's going to be there. It's going to mutate, and we're going to. God forbid it mutates to affect young people.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine that.
Yeah.
I'm nearly. Go on.
Sorry, we've got a kind of a delay in our line. It is interesting that this particular, this COVID-19 has not, you know, been as damaging to young people. But I get your point. If you're 15 and this thing is nearly killing you or killing you even, this is a whole, as you mentioned earlier on about something else, it's a whole different kettle of fish, isn't it?
Oh, God, my God. If it did mutate to affect children, it would just be an absolute nightmare. Can you imagine that? You know, I have children. I have five children. And when kids catch something, they spread it around like nobody's...
Yeah, like lice in school. When
you're a parent, you catch everything that your kid brings home from school. You catch.
Well, the thing is that we don't know where this is going. I watch the media. I'm in the media. And I watch a lot of media in Australia and in Britain, the BBC and ITV and places like that. And I can't help thinking that they're not being totally honest. That they're not being totally honest with me. You know?
Oh, absolutely. I'm glad you think the same thing. I think there is an awful lot of propaganda out there. They're really pushing this. They're not being totally upfront. There are rumours that... we know for a fact that lots... In the first weeks in Norway, that 33 elderly people in nursing homes died very shortly after receiving the vaccine.
They're putting that down to
33 people in about a couple of weeks just died from that. They say, oh, they would have died anyway. Well, if they would have died anyway, why the bloody hell are you giving them a vaccine?
That's a good point. Yes.
That's what they were saying.
Yeah.
Now, I've seen similar reports from Israel. But again, those things are not being... This is what I mean. We're only hearing one side of the coin.
Why is that?
I get it from reliable sources. Mm. You know they talk about misinformation and disinformation?
Yes.
Henry?
Yes.
There is no such thing as misinformation or disinformation. There is just information. Mm. If you're talking about... In my mind... There is information. It's the interpretation of that information that can become problematic. I will listen to all information, even completely outrageous information, and I hate conspiracy theories, but I will listen to it because it adds to my bank of information.
Yes, yes.
And I'll listen to the right-hand end of the spectrum, the left-hand end of the spectrum, and I will make my decision... And I'll accept responsibility for making my decision on the information that I'm getting. There is no disinformation or misinformation. It's all just information. And I will not be swayed by groupthink. Groupthink is a massive killer.
But do you think that mainstream mainstream media is responsible for this group thinking, as you call it,
where people
just watch Channel 9 News, or whatever, if you're in Australia, or any commercial network, or even the ABC, our national broadcaster, and they just go, okay, they said it, so it must be true.
Absolutely, I do. I think the media is involved in a massive promotion of groupthink at the moment. In fact, I don't think they're doing it overtly. I just think, covertly. I don't think they're doing it covertly. I just think that they're sucked in by the groupthink as well.
So I'll
make my decision on my own thoughts. I will not be told when. And I will not be told how, and I will not be told what vaccine either. I will make my decision.
Well, it's always...
People might say it's selfish.
Oh, not at all. I wouldn't have thought so. Everyone's got a right to their opinion anyway, and how they gather their information. Before we go, Rick, I just want to ask you and mention to our listeners who may be new to this platform that you have been up to the Northern Territory of Australia twice and into Northwest Australia. And you found the Kimberleys, and you found yourself treating children, probably a lot of the time, who have ridiculously unnecessary diseases like leprosy. I think you mentioned to me.
Yes.
Are you thinking of going back again, or what's the situation? And how did you go the last time? I do believe a radio. You mentioned to me that radio stations warned you that they weren't going to interview you because you'd be upsetting the apple cart, so to speak.
And yeah, that's right. That's correct.
And you found a radio station that would talk to you, I believe. Is that right?
No, I found a newspaper.
Oh, it was a newspaper.
A newspaper that would print what I'd... my report when I got back from the top end. There was only... I got told by a number of media organisations, we don't want you to talk about that. We'll just talk about the good things. We don't want to talk about anything negative and what's happening up in the top end. I even got told that by an Aboriginal media organisation. They didn't want me to discuss what was happening in the top end. So
An Aboriginal media organisation?
Yes. Well, they were funded by the government and by the mines. The DJ's job was at stake. He said, I can't. He was a first Australian, the DJ, and he said, I can't talk about this. He said, I've just been given a brief. I can't talk about this. So just talk about the good things that you've seen and done. So, yeah. Henry, Australia is the last developed nation on the planet to have trachoma. Now, I'm writing a children's book at the moment. I've got two book deals signed, sealed, delivered.
Wow.
One about the trip through the Kimberley doing the medical relief work with the little motorbike. And I'm writing another book called The Adventures of Two Whippets on Three Wheels, and I've got two little whippet puppies, yes. And I'm taking them around in the sidecar of a little green army motorbike, and I'm writing a book about that. Any money, any royalties from the book, and my publisher says that it could well be a bestseller, any money that comes from that, 100% of any royalties will be donated to trachoma prevention, probably through the Fred Hollows Foundation. I haven't quite worked out who yet, but I've got my pension.
Yes.
I've got a roof over my head. I've got food on the table. I don't need any royalties from a book. I'll just give them away.
Listen, I want to get... I'm just wondering if you can give our listeners any details at this stage. Is this book being published in print?
Yeah, it's been published in print, and it's also going to be an e-book. Mm-hmm. And the name of the publisher is the Birralee Press. Mm-hmm. It's run by a group of first Australians, and that's it's spelled B-I-R-L-I, so that's Bravo India Lima Romeo India Birralee Press. And I've just signed two book deals.
Fantastic.
And a third on the way.
Fantastic. And are these available now?
No, the first book will be released in August, and that's called Muriel the Medicycle, and that's about my trip through the north of Australia on a motorcycle ambulance.
Yes. And the other, you had a children's book. Is that one of these?
Anybody wants to know, mate, can just Google or go onto Facebook and just type in Muriel the Medicycle.
Yes, I'm sure.
You know, if they type that in.
I'm sure it's the only one. Muriel the Medicycle. Yeah. Fantastic. Well, look, I'll definitely be keeping an eye on that. And I think it's fantastic and selfless of you, Rick, to be doing this. And, you know...
it's not selfless, mate. I'm just an angry old man.
Are you a grumpy old man like me?
No, I'm a grumpy old man. Yeah, I don't like what I see. I don't like the hypocrisy.
And you're not quiet.
So
about
I've got this deeds, not words, mate. Deeds, not words. We've got too many words going on.
Yeah.
Look what's happening with these rape allegations in Parliament and stuff at the moment. It's all words. The Prime Minister can rant on as much as he likes about a good workplace culture and stuff like that, but the deeds are completely in opposition. They're a complete paradox, aren't they?
Yes.
His words and his deeds are a complete paradox.
Yep. And I think
this is from a, you know, a member of the Hillsong Church, and we all know who formed the Hillsong Church.
Mm.
A convicted pedophile.
Well, I did not. I didn't know.
No worries about that.
Yeah, and just for our international audience.
Well, yes, the man in front.
Sorry, I just want to explain Hillsong Church. It's an Australian, well, I would call it a cult, and it's been hugely successful. Its base is in Western Sydney. I don't know. I presume they've got churches all over this country, or what they call churches. It's a sect, really, and they've been hugely successful internationally. They're in Britain, they're in America, and they're probably in some other countries in Europe. And the Prime Minister of Australia, Scott Morrison, is a member of this cult, and I think that's your point has really been made, Rick, with regard to our Prime Minister.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you consider the pastor who set up the Hillsong Church was convicted and investigated and convicted of the molestation of 2 9-year-old boys.
Was that before he started the church?
No, it was part of the church. But what happened was he died before he was convicted. He was found guilty. Mm. There was no doubt about that. It's true.
Yes.
And his son, who of course is Brian Houston, paid a great deal of money to the two convicted boys that were complaining for them to keep their mouths shut, but they didn't.
Mm.
And Brian Houston himself was investigated by the New South Wales Police for enabling.
Yes.
Enabling pedophilia, and his answer to the investigators was, well, these two boys led my father on. And that's true. That's in the record.
Really?
I know.
Why is this not damaging the church? Because it clearly isn't.
No, well, I mean, it's got prime ministerial credence, and hasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you only look at people like Margaret Court. She got Order of Australia because she's a member of the same church. The New South Wales Police Commissioner is a member of the same church.
Yeah, I just want to.
I
just want to explain Margaret Court. She was a tennis champion back in the 70s, I think, or even earlier. I don't know. She's homophobic, if you like. She's anti-gay and lesbian, LGBTI. She doesn't believe in it. She thinks it's all bad. And she got an Order of Australia or something, or she got some promotion from the Order of Australia on Australia Day. Is that right?
Yeah, an awful woman. Her opinions are just wrong. She's not nice.
Mm.
You know, I watched her the other day, actually watched a YouTube video of her speaking in tongues at a church meeting, which is something they do. They get up and they talk through the microphone, and they say that it's God talking through them, but that they're in a sort of trance-like state, and whatever they're saying is, and she did it for ages, whatever she was saying was completely incoherent. The words weren't even recognizable. It's called talking in tongues, and this is one of the things that they do. It's all very strange. And they donate 10%. One of the things you've got to do to be a member of the church.
And you're talking about Scientology. Sorry, not Scientology. Gee, how did I get that so wrong?
Hillsong.
Oh dear, what a mistake
to make. Hillsong, you donate 10% of your salary to Hillsong.
Yeah.
And, the only people that make it, Brian Houston's one of the richest men in Australia, you know, somebody's getting a lot out of this. It's really quite. If it wasn't so scary.
Is it
13 members of our cabinet of the Australian government are also members of the Hillsong Church. 13 members.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I can't believe that my subconscious led me from Hillsong to the Church of Scientology. It says a lot when you think about it. Rick, it's always fascinating, absolutely fascinating talking to you. Thank you for joining me here on Bondi Tunes.
No worries, mate. No worries.
Okay.
But, so, next time you call me, ask me and I'll start talking in tongues.
Yes, please do. Stay on the line for a sec there. This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
Adam Devlin, Pick of the Week.
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia, and I'm joined by Adam Devlin, who is our political correspondent for Australia. However, he's also our music guru. He joins me now from Melbourne. Adam, I think it's time for you to switch your hats from your political editor hat to your music guru hat.
Done.
What is the music guru hat this time?
It's my trusty old beret.
You're
covered
back.
In.
Yes.
It's my old beret covered in badges from musicians and bands that I love.
That's a beautiful thing.
Proud of place, right at the very front, is a big Carly Simon badge because she never gets any mention or love.
Oh, no, of course she doesn't. She gets plenty of love from this show, that's for sure. I actually wanted to ask you about something else. Someone who's done the James Bond movie, the theme of James Bond. What's her name?
Yes.
What's her name? I've just completely lost
her. Current or old? Recent or old?
Billie Eilish.
Ah, yes.
What do you think of Billie Eilish?
I'm a big fan of Billie Eilish. Yeah? I think she's incredibly talented. I think she's peaked. I think Where Do We Go When We Sleep, her massive album, I think that will be the biggest selling album of her career. I think she's one of those female artists, and there's a whole bunch of them, who burst onto the scene with an album that just seems to hit a chord with absolutely everybody on the planet. Mm. And then they, you know, they have a few more hits after that, and then they've got a strong audience that sticks with them for life, but their hits sort of drop off. People like Carly Simon, who I mentioned a minute ago, Carole King, Joni Mitchell,
but they,
you know, Linda Ronstadt.
They lasted much longer. I mean, Billie Eilish is only 18, for goodness sake.
Absolutely, and she's just starting her career. but the parallels are there. You know, her first album, her debut album, is one of the biggest selling albums, you know, in the last 30 or 40 years by anyone, anywhere. She can't compete. She can't match that. Like, it's, you know, her next album, which will be out this year sometime, you know, it'll be a huge success, but it won't sell as much as the first album. And the one after that will sell even less, you know, a bit like Alanis Morissette did.
Right. It's interesting the way that works. And also, there's such a competitive market out there.
Absolutely. But the thing is, because she's got the songwriting ability and she's got an amazing voice, an unusual, unique voice, which is amazing, she will have a career for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
She will continue being a musician and a singer and a songwriter for the rest of her life. And she'll have a very successful career.
And do you think, I don't know, does she write her own music? I think she does.
Her and her brother write them.
Is that right? Very.
Her brother's called Phineas.
Right.
And they write, she writes the lyrics, he writes the music.
Right. Brother-sister thing going on there.
Yes.
Just like
he
her.
Also produces her and plays some of the instruments. So it's a very much a family affair.
Yes, just like Karen Carpenter and her brother.
Mm. In fact, I saw a doco on her and
a
while ago.
I saw the same one.
And they showed her and her brother in her bedroom in the family home, living with her mum and dad, and that's where the album was recorded and written and recorded.
Yes, I saw clips from that. That is a documentary that is out right now. It's on Apple Music or Apple TV or whatever the hell they call it. Interesting that she got a lot of flack for her weight.
Yes,
which seems really harsh to me, because why, you know, why do people
well,
do
she's
this
a, she's a young girl, she's a musician, she should look like
skinny,
you know, she should look like Britney Spears.
I see.
Not like your stock standard teenage girl.
How very dare she not look like Britney Spears?
I know.
It's disgraceful. Okay, let's get back to this week's pick of the week. And this is Barry Gibb and Dolly Parton. What a mix, Adam.
It's... when I heard this, I just did that. I was speechless.
Yes. Gobsmacked.
Now, neither Barry Gibb nor Dolly Parton really need much of an introduction. If anyone out there doesn't know who either of them are,
They've been living under a rock.
Yeah. You know, Dolly Parton has sales of somewhere around the 400 million albums globally. Mm. One of the most successful female artists of any genre, of any era, of all time. Mm. Barry Gibb, of course, is the lead singer and writer for the Bee Gees.
And he's the only one left.
He's the only one left, yes. Yeah. And, of course, the Bee Gees, you know, one of the biggest selling rock bands of all time. They're, you know, when you're talking about the biggest selling bands of all time, you're talking about the Beatles, you're talking about the Bee Gees.
Or the Police.
Yeah, the Police. You're talking about ABBA. So, you know, just when you take somebody like Barry Gibb and you take somebody like Dolly Parton and you put them together, more often than not, it doesn't work. And more often than not, it doesn't work because of the personalities involved. When you take two global superstars and put them together, it's very difficult to get one of them to, or either or both of them, to say, I'm going to let the other person shine on this as much as I shine. Usually it becomes very much a one-upmanship.
And egos, two big egos in one little studio.
Yeah. Now, Dolly Parton doesn't have an ego. Barry Gibb doesn't have an ego.
Yeah, they're both very... I don't know about Barry, but Dolly Parton is so down to earth. She really is amazingly down to earth for someone who's, you know, got Dollyland.
Well, you know, she's been a superstar since she was 13 years
Sorry,
old.
Sorry, I meant to say Dollywood.
Dollywood, yes. So, you know, she's been a global superstar all of her life, basically.
Since a teenager, you mentioned.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing with Dolly is she's at that stage in her career, and she's been there for a little while now, where she just has nothing to prove to anyone anymore. Mm. And so she now just does the things she wants to do.
Right.
And Barry Gibb, we just mentioned, he's the only surviving Gibb left. His two brothers who made 2/3 of the Bee Gees, of course, have passed, and his other brother, Andy, have passed. Mm. And he wanted to do something to memorialize the legacy of the Gibb brothers. Mm-hmm. And so he decided to do a new album called Greenfields. And it's a country-tinged album. I'm not going to say it's a country album, although he did go to Nashville to record it. And it does have a country feel to it. But it's his favorite songs that he's written for either the Bee Gees or for his solo career. Mm. Or for Andy, his, like, you know, famous Gibb brother songs. And he's recorded each and every one of them as a duet with one of his favourite singers.
Right.
And it's just a stunning...
What a lovely thing to do.
Oh, look, it is a stunning album. I mean, it's very laid back. It's very country. But some of the people on this album are just amazing. First up, he does a duet of Rest Your Love on Me with Olivia Newton-John, who, of course, you all know that I adore.
Yes. Now, even more Rest than Dolly.
Yes.
Okay.
She's at the very top of the list.
Yes. Okay.
Now, Rest Your Love on Me, of course, he wrote that and gave it to Andy Gibb to record as a single, and it was a global top 10 hit for him as a duet with Olivia Newton-John in 1979. Mm. And he brought Olivia back. He spoke to Olivia and said, you know, I'd really love for you to be involved in this album. And she said, I would love to do that as well. And he said, I would love to do a take of Rest Your Love on Me with you. And she jumped at the chance, and it's beautiful. Yes. But also on here, you've got Sheryl Crow doing a duet with How to Mend a Broken Heart. You've got Dolly Parton with Words, of course, we've mentioned. You've got Little Big Town with Lonely Days. You've got Brandy Carlile with Run to Me. Keith Urban with I've Got to Get a Message to You.
Really?
Gillian Welsh, who, of course, is Florence and the Machine singer. I just had to get a mental blank there for a moment. Mm-hmm. Her and David Rawlings doing a stunning rendition of Butterfly with him on this album. The album's called Greenfields. It's stunning. If you love good, high-quality songwriting and brilliant production and great vocals, You can't go wrong with this album.
Mm. Are you sure you're not working for the company?
It's all just love, Henry.
It's just pure love.
Yep.
Okay, so would you like to present this for us, Adam?
Absolutely. Words is a Bee Gees song that was initially released in 1968. It's an amazing song. It is one of their better known songs, and that's saying something because they've produced some amazing hits over the years. Mm. But it is one of their enduring classics. It has been recorded well over 30 times by, you know, mainstream artists right around the world. And here is something. I was going to say something special, but it's more special than special, if that could be such mm-hmm. a thing.
Yeah.
You've got two absolute legends of the entertainment industry, of the recording industry, two people who will go down in history. While ever there's humanity, these people will be known for what they've done in their careers. One, of course, is the incomparable Barry Gibb, and the other is the amazing and incomparable Dolly Parton. And together, they just sound brilliant. What I love about this song is the respect that Barry Gibb has for Dolly Parton. Dolly sings all over him during this. I'd go so far as too much as to say this is a Dolly Parton song with Barry Gibb doing guest vocals on it. But you know, that's the professionalism of Barry Gibb. He understands that Dolly can do this, and she doesn't need to be directed or produced. She just comes in and does what she's going to do. And I actually saw him talk about the recording of this, and he said, you know, most artists come in and you've got to adjust your tone and you know, genre and everything to match them. He said Dolly came in and just sang it perfectly. He said, I didn't have to, like, she slotted right in with me. It was just brilliant. So, but, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you how wonderful this is, because as soon as you hear it, you're going to know for yourself. So don't listen to me. Don't take my word for it. Have a listen to this. It's absolutely spectacular. This album is going to be one of the albums of this year already. I can tell you that. It's Barry Gibb and Dolly Parton off the amazing album Greenfields. It's the spectacular song Words.
It's only words And words are all I have to take your heart away.
The sun never sets on the iTunes.